The world is on the precipice of one of the greatest disruptions to oil, and this trajectory will result in peak oil demand before 2030.
But much like the immutable laws of physics make it impossible for one man to go roof to roof all over the world in one night, so too the realities of supply and demand, revenues and costs, make it so that peak demand for oil will not come in the mid to near term.
This is Platts Capital Crude. I'm Brian Scheid. And just a few years ago, peak oil supply was all the rage, but the shale revolution has changed all that, and now the talk is peak oil demand. But will peak demand prove to be a myth as well? Today, we're going to debate just that. I'm here at Georgetown University, joined by the school's best and brightest, and they're going to answer definitively, is peak demand the new reality, or is it fake news?
My name is Rob Byers. I'm a second-year MBA student at Georgetown from New Orleans, Louisiana. I will be arguing today that peak oil demand is a myth.
My name is Phil Daniel. I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm an undergraduate junior at Georgetown University. I'm debating in favor of peak oil demand by 2030.
Hi, so my name is Beatrice Godus, and I'm from Germany, and I'm a second-year Master in Foreign Service student here at Georgetown University. And I will be arguing for peak oil demand by 2030.
Before we begin, let's go to Professor James Kohler for a disclaimer.
So my midterm assignment is a debate where we pick different topics, and this one is in regards to peak oil demand around 2030-ish. The course is a graduate elective course here at Georgetown. It's an energy structure and markets course, and these topics have been assigned to them, so please do not hold it against them personally if you're offended by anything they say.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event.
My name is Rob Byers.
Today I will be arguing that peak oil demand in the near to midterm future, as we defined by 2030 to 2035, is an absolute myth. This comes down to two main arguments. One, the developing world versus the developed world. And two, the myriad uses of a barrel of oil. To begin with, the developed world will reach peak demand sometime around 2020, according to an estimate recently released by Wood Mackenzie. However, while demand in the developed world will decrease by about 4 million barrels per day by 2035, demand in the developing world will increase by about 16 million barrels by 2035. Most of this demand is going to be driven by economic growth, the growth of lower classes moving into the middle class, and increase in trade. I want to emphasize that this is not an argument on peak gasoline demand, and this is also not an argument on the adoption or growth rates of electric vehicles. While both of those are important factors, that is not what we're here to debate today. I'll start with crude oil demand, and crude oil's outputs come in four main buckets. Gasoline, middle distillates like jet fuel and diesel, heavy distillates like ship fuel, and feedstock for petrochemicals. While we acknowledge, on our side of the argument, that gasoline demand will flatten or perhaps decrease in the near future, this will be more than offset by an increase in demand in middle distillates, heavy distillates, and petrochemicals. Specifically, we think that the growth in the electric vehicle market will have restraints on it that will make the most rosy-eyed predictions false. Moreover, we feel that electric vehicle demand is driven a lot by subsidies in different parts of the world. And as those subsidies come to expire, we feel that sales of electric vehicles will continue to decline. For example, China's main subsidy is due to come to an end in 2020. And as we've seen in certain markets in the United States, such as Georgia, once the federal mandate or the federal subsidy expired, sales plummeted. So in conclusion, we are not here today to debate that peak gasoline demand has arrived and gone. We are not here to debate whether or not electric vehicles are a thing of the future or a total pipe dream. Our position is that in the near to midterm, growth in petrochemicals, middle distillates, and heavy distillates will outweigh any negative growth or lack of demand on the gasoline side.
So my name is Beatrice Godus. The foundation of our argument is simple and, in our view, irrefutable.
The world is on the precipice of one of the greatest disruptions to oil, and this trajectory will result in peak oil demand before 2030. This disruption will be driven by two main factors. One, improved fuel economy, and two, substitutes gaining market share from the internal combustion engine. Let's start with a brief historical view to appreciate the alacrity with which disruptions in this industry can materialize. Recall, oil displaced coal as the world's most demanded energy source around 1950, even though coal was cheaper than oil. Why? Because of a fundamental shift in the way people traveled and how goods were transported. 30 years earlier, Ford mass-produced the first affordable automobile, and by 1950, the car had evolved from a luxury item to a mass-consumed product, sold at around $30,000 in today's prices. We are experiencing the same phenomenon again. The price of Ford's automobile in 1950 not only coincides with Tesla's price for its new mainstream model, but we are about to witness a similar shift in the way we travel and transport goods. Only this time, this rapidly approaching disruption will decrease the amount of oil we demand. In the next few minutes, we will detail how these two disruption factors, again, improved fuel economy and rise in substitutes, are not simply fodder for those Prius-driving Californians to feel good about themselves. These are two trends that must be taken seriously, as each, on its own, could reverse the trend of rising demand in oil. But in combination, they will disrupt the oil economy as we know it today. First, consider efficiency improvements of the internal combustion engine. Let's look at the U.S. Ever since the oil crisis of the 70s, the government has continuously tightened its corporate average fuel economy standards. In 2015, it demanded that new passenger cars drive 35 miles per gallon, and standards are hitting 54 miles per gallon by 2025. This is the basis for the EIA prediction of a 12% decrease of light-duty vehicle energy consumption. That takes into account a 5% increase in miles traveled and that older cars are still on U.S. roads. After the 2015 Volkswagen scandal, we would argue that adherence to these standards is improving as well, making efficiency's dent into oil demand ever more potent. What is the case for the passenger car? Looks similar in heavy and middle-duty transport, as well as the aircraft industry, where engines need increasingly less fuel and intelligent technology such as smart GPS optimizes fuel economy. As Deloitte points out, for the aircraft industry, economic incentives are in fuel efficiency's favor, as it can save up to 6% of operational costs and provides a hedge against rising oil prices. All taken into account, Bloomberg forecasts that ambitious efficiency improvements alone could lead to peak oil demand well before 2030. Second, let's consider the growing market share of substitutes to the internal combustion engine. Just 2 days ago, OPEC admitted that electric vehicles have gained market share more rapidly than they expected, and that this alone could lead to a plateau on oil demand in the 2030s. With electric vehicles alone having such power, we want to point out that fuel-switching vehicles will likely gain popularity again too, due to rising oil prices, which the IEA predicts to reach $80 per barrel by 2020 and over $100 by 2030. But let's just consider electric passenger vehicles, where demand is driven by cost and convenience. Cost will be driven down by decreasing battery prices and increased competition, while convenience will be fueled by government's willingness to promote charging stations, something we see around the world already. Given how wedded the global economy is to oil, it would not be surprising that a major disruption may seem to have, to some of you, like a pipe dream. But as quickly as Ford's automobiles changed the way humans traveled and consumed energy, so too will the change in engine efficiency and rise in substitutes revolutionize both the generation of consumers and the structure of the global economy. Those that are wise enough to read the tea leaves, such as the ones laid out by Saudi Arabia in the Vision 2030, the official strategy for one of the world's largest oil producers to wean itself off oil before 2030, we recognize that our argument is validated and irrefutable.
My name is Rob Byers.
Well, the arguments laid out by Beatrice are certainly interesting. They make for a great story. And it is just that. It's a story. And if you believe that story, you might also believe that a jolly fat man in a red suit is going to drop down your chimney this Christmas Eve and leave a couple of presents under the tree. And it's not a bad story. It's a great story. It's sustained children's dreams for years. But much like the immutable laws of physics make it impossible for one man to go roof to roof all over the world in one night, so too the realities of supply and demand, revenues and costs, make it so that peak demand for oil will not come in the mid to near term. Couple of things you went on and that I want to talk about. First on is fuel efficiency. I think fuel efficiency is excellent. We think that as the cost to travel from point A to point B comes down, more people will be making that trip. More goods. As the cost of moving goods from point A to point B drops, more goods are going to move. So instead of one ship carrying 18,000 containers going from Shanghai to Los Angeles, you're going to get two ships going from Shanghai to Los Angeles. So that's the argument on fuel efficiency. And again, we concede that in the passenger light-duty vehicle segment, peak oil demand, peak gasoline demand, particularly in the developed world, has come and gone. A big argument for us is trade, heavy fuels, jet planes. Now, BP in their annual report predicts that about 2 billion people are going to move from low to middle income over the next two decades. Those people are going to fly in airplanes. They are suddenly, and this isn't moving into the United States middle class where you're going to have, you know, a three-bedroom house and a two-car garage. You're going from $4 a day to $10 a day. The idea that all of those people are going to be able to move into a high-end electric vehicle segment is simply false. So now we're moving into the electric vehicle side of the argument. We contend that electric vehicles are here to stay. They are going to experience tremendous growth rates between now and 2035. Wood Mackenzie predicts, you know, going from about 2 to 3 million electric vehicles on the road today to about 115 million electric vehicles on the road by 2035. Exxon had the number around 100 million. And in the end, that's great. That's good. But it's not going to totally disrupt other areas of oil output. Moreover, there are a lot of anchors on electric vehicles. Number one, and while we're talking about reality, take Tesla. Elon Musk is hailed as one of the smartest people on the planet, cannot get his Model 3 out of the factory on time. And you never hear people talk about inputs to electric vehicles. The cost of lithium carbonate has gone from about $4,000 a ton in 2011 to $14,000 a ton today. That's with a penetration rate of around 1% of electric vehicles. You move that number up to 115 million electric vehicles on the road by 2035, what's that going to do to lithium prices? In its article this summer, basically announcing the death of the internal combustion engine, The Economist cited UBS saying that the total cost of ownership for electric vehicles will reach parity with internal combustion engines next year, in 2018, but at a loss to their producers. And in the real world of supply and demand, revenues and costs, that is simply an unsustainable model. Battery technology will improve, those costs will come down over time. But to contend that the growth rate will be so high as to totally disrupt and flatten oil demand in whole to 2035 is false, predicated on poor information, and it should not be taken seriously.
My name is Field Daniel. Rob, you've laid out some interesting points. However, I think you're wrong. The first point I'd like to address is the rise in demand for oil, particularly as a function of economic growth of non-OECD countries. First, many non-OECD countries lack the legacy infrastructure and resource endowment which allows these countries to invest in clean tech and other alternative fuel sources, particularly biofuels and natural gas. I'll address these later. But additionally, much of this economic growth is actually going to come in the form of tech and service industries rather than an industrial growth or revitalization of industry. Your next argument was interesting, particularly about the multiple uses of a barrel of oil and the distillates and the transportation demand of oil byproducts. But ironically, oil has instigated various conservation efforts and fuel standards as a result of high prices, particularly with gasoline. Gasoline demand is undoubtedly a function of fuel economy, of the vehicle fleet, but also of the number of miles driven. So over time, the fuel economy of the vehicle stock, that is, those vehicles currently on the market, has changed as a result of both market developments, but also has changed as a function of changes in the economy standards based on our government and the governments globally. So additional complexities will arise as changing vehicles come into the market, but also as changing vehicle designs enter the market, as this will definitely affect the fuel economies of these cars. Rob, you argue that it's more efficient to travel from point A to B, thus people will make more of those trips. But what you should have argued is that if the trip is cheaper, more people will make that trip. There is a difference there. Even the EIA in its 2018 Energy Outlook opines a peak in transportation energy consumption, primarily from rising fuel efficiency, which in turn will outweigh increases in total travel and freight movements throughout the projection period. Additionally, the second phase of the fuel efficiency and greenhouse gas regulations for medium and heavy-duty vehicles will take place in 2027. Now let's talk about substitutions. So even in the midst of historically low domestic gasoline prices in 2009 and 2015, substitutes for ICEs have been actually increasing market share. Although sales of hybrid vehicles did decline in both those years, the sales of EVs didn't waver. They've steadily increased market share. This implies a fundamental shift in consumption patterns, being that electric vehicles are now both affordable, reliant, and most importantly, advanced technology. Additionally, at the end of 2016, it was estimated that there are approximately 1,700 natural gas fueling stations in the United States, up from 800 stations in 2008. Infrastructure is undoubtedly one of the biggest barriers for substitutes, which is why I'm surprised you didn't mention it. To address your point of the myriad uses of a barrel of oil, undoubtedly petrochemicals will play a major role in future demand. However, petrochemicals are an interesting market in the sense that a petrochemical can be obtained from both a petroleum or natural gas product. But the key here is natural gas. Natural gas is a resource that is abundant and a resource that has been trading at a significant discount, especially since the shale gas revolution. Although oil demand can be a function of petrochemical demand, the demand for petrochemicals can be satisfied by natural gas, which ultimately mitigates the need for oil. At a price consistently below $5 per million BTU, in line with prices at the beginning of the shale boom, this development would result in a greater substitution of naphtha, which is a derivative of crude oil, and it would be replaced with the natural gas-derived ethane as a feedstock for petrochemicals. This is already underway in the Middle East, and just imagine if a country such as China were to start producing comparably cheap gas. Ultimately, this would have a substitution effect for oil in the petrochemicals industry.
So let me ask about policy incentives such as tax credits for electric vehicles, what impact those have on peak demand. In other words, let's say all incentives to buy electric vehicles are wiped out globally. Does demand skyrocket to levels where a demand peak is elusive? On the other hand, let's say there's new policy incentives put in place all over the world. Does that quicken the pace of reaching the peak?
Well, first of all, we want to make clear that we believe that peak demand will be reached before 2030 just on fuel efficiency alone. And therefore, unless this is a very interesting question, we do not believe that whether or not incentives are wiped out or increased, it's going to have a huge effect on peak demand. Nonetheless, let's go down the rabbit hole and let's just think about what would happen if all subsidies and policy incentives are wiped out. Well, first of all, just regarding that point that we made earlier, is that Tesla's new model has already decreased in cost dramatically, and it's already at the point where we already said, 1950 Ford's automobile really skyrocketed. So we believe that just the cost effect will continue to induce people to buy electric vehicles, especially on top of that, as Tesla made an electric vehicle cool again, in the sense that, it might become the new iPhone. Everybody wants to have a cool, shiny Tesla. And another thing that could happen from that, from a wiping out of any policy incentives, it might unleash market forces, which usually induce producers to become more innovative, decrease costs further, rethink business models, which might have relied on subsidies earlier, and actually make that whole shift towards electric vehicles more sustainable. What's the second scenario that you laid out? So what would happen if policy incentives were increased? Actually, we are seeing exactly that in the developing world right now. So we believe that that's the more realistic scenario, especially if, as Rob pointed out, that's where all the demand for oil will come from. If you look at India, they have that very ambitious goal of wiping out any sales of petrol cars by 2030. Whether or not that's realistic or not is a different question. But just that the willingness is there is going to have a huge effect. And if you look at a country like China, which you know, policy incentives are a huge part of the way the economy develops. We believe that the trajectory of those policy incentives is already set towards an increasing shift towards electric vehicles.
So to answer your question succinctly, if all policy incentives, which I hear subsidies when you ask that question, all of those went away tomorrow, surely it would. I already think that peak oil demand by 2035 is a myth. I don't think it's impossible by 2050. It would push it back significantly. I got a chart in front of me here, and it might not be the easiest thing for your radio listeners to go through, but it's essentially a graph of electric vehicle shares in the state of Georgia in the United States leading up to an expiration of a state tax credit of $5,000 per electric vehicle purchased. And as soon as the tax credit expires, sales of electric vehicles absolutely plummet. Now, the title of this graph is EV market share in Georgia, but it might as well be called Human Nature once the government stops footing most of the bill. In my estimation, if you were to take away all of these incentives and subsidies, electric vehicles would be forced to compete on a strictly cost-effective basis. And they're not there yet. The other side of the question, if the most aggressive policies were put into place across the world, what would that do to peak oil demand? I think it'd be foolish to deny that it would not move peak oil demand forward. Of course it would. But my response to that is, and you see it, right? Beatrice just mentioned it in India. They want to go no gasoline-fueled cars by 2030. However, they're projected to buy about 20,000 new airplanes in the next 5 to 10 years. Those airplanes going to be electric? I don't think so. I'm not getting on an electric airplane right now. I could tell you that much for sure. So I think policy, if they aggressively put it all in place, sometimes it's here today, gone tomorrow. We had great environmental regulations coming out during the Obama years. Trump's now in place. Those regulations are coming back. At some level, it's like crabs in a barrel. Some are on top today, some are on the bottom tomorrow. To answer your question, yes, if a really aggressive incentives, government policies were put in place, it would accelerate the arrival of peak demand. However, if they were all taken away, I think it is undisputed that sales of electric vehicles would plummet.
All right, reserving the right to ask the final question, and you know this one was coming. So what's the best argument for why each of your sides is wrong?
So if I was going to pick apart my own argument, I think, reluctantly, of course, I think for peak demand to arrive by 2035 or sooner, you're going to have to see a true technological breakthrough in batteries. And it's possible that that's not far off. Moore's law, as it relates to technology, is an exponential curve. So if we saw a Moore's law, kind of an inverse of Moore's law in costs, they've been going down, and in 5 years you hit that bend in the curve and they really drop, that would precipitate peak oil demand much sooner than later. And then on the battery tech side, who knows, maybe there's just a massive breakthrough and that's what they're going to have to, and that's what would drive electric vehicle adoption rates, because it would no longer be about subsidies, it would no longer be about policy, it would simply be, why on earth am I going to pay $20,000 for a gas-powered car when I can pay $10,000 for an electric car?
So we think that there's actually a substantial case against peak oil demand by 2030, in particular when imagining India as one of the biggest economic growth engines that we'll see within the next 30 years. And just imagine if India sort of came online just as much as America has in terms of economic growth, but also of oil demand. And so we think that that would be a huge development in the case for continued demand growth. And we also think that sort of the argument against human ingenuity, sort of in reverse of what Rob had said, you know, we're relying heavily on battery technology and innovation, I guess, decreasing costs, which is a big contingency. So those are basic assumptions that we made when we were putting together our argument. But again, those are just contingencies. Who really knows if we're going to start seeing, you know, less and less of such a decrease in costs, right? Maybe
sort of we're hitting a valley on the costs, especially for batteries and whatnot. And I think lastly, and I did mention this in my rebuttal of Rob's point, was existing infrastructure and expertise. So it's, you know, very easy for a government to get on board with sort of pro-petroleum policies, particularly if they already have existing infrastructure, but also if, you know, they can make some money off of it. So there are so many countries around the world that can benefit from utilizing and really developing out a lot of their natural resource endowments. And so participation by these governments does not give them the incentive to look towards cleaner energy. So those are just some of the big arguments against the peak oil demand by 2030.
That's it for this week. Big thanks to Field Daniel, Beatrice Godis, and Rob Byers for your time and insight. And thank you to Professor Kohler and Georgetown University for hosting this debate. Capital Crude is produced by Brian Scheid and Megan Gordon in Washington, D.C., and Liz Bassett in Houston. We will see you next week.